Okay, good morning. Today we have the pleasure to have here in Girona Matthias Klatt. Matthias is a full professor of legal philosophy, sociology of law and legal politics at the University of Graz. And I think he's one of the legal philosophers who we have to read now in Europe. Fortunately, we have also the pleasure to have a new, very recent new, that is the publication in Spanish of the translation of his book, Making the Law Explicit. In the English version, but originally in German, who is Hacer el Derecho Explícito, who is published two weeks ago in Marcial Pons' publisher. He is also author with Moritz Meister of an important book about the constitutional structure of proportionality, who is more related with the topic for the seminar for today, which is we have the title about proportionality and justification. It's a real pleasure to have you here in Girona today. Thank you so much for coming, and it's your time for the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jordi. Let me first start by welcoming you all. I'm very happy that you came to this talk, and I'm eager to learn about your comments and about your questions you might have as to this paper. It's a great honor for me to be here, and I would like to thank Jordi Ferrer for inviting me here. It's a great pleasure to visit this magnificent group here in Girona. I've been following the activities of the Center in Legal Philosophy here for some time now, and I'm very impressed by the great work that is being done here, so I'm very happy to be here. So let's see whether this works. Perfect. My talk is on proportionality and justification, and it's based on a draft paper which is about to be published later this year, I hope, in a collected volume I edit together with a colleague from Amsterdam, a collected volume that will appear in the Oxford University Press entitled Constitutionalism Justified. And basically the volume consists of papers addressing Rainer Faust's theory of justice and trying to take over his general philosophical account of justice as understood as a right to justification or being based on a right to justification, taking that over to legal theory and specifically to constitutionalism. So that's more or less the context of the paper. So constitutional ideas migrate, and one of the best examples for this migration of ideas is the proportionality test. Its worldwide and rapid dissemination has made the proportionality test one of the most successful legal transplants ever. We can look at this migration in three different ways. A first way to seeks to explain this development of migration from a socio-legal perspective, and I have a quotation. The global move toward proportionality is a global move toward justification. The global spread of proportionality is therefore explained by the global spread of a constitutional culture which puts justification at its center. Proportionality is the central legal device to ensure the flourishing of this legal culture. So that's from a paper, and there's also a book by Ido Porat and Moshe Cohen Elia. So we may call this the descriptive approach, right? It's a descriptive explanation. A second way of looking at this migration is Robert Alexis. Robert Alexis defends the proportionality test and its universality, right, its global validity. He defends it by linking it to the very structure of rights themselves. Structure of rights per se requires proportionality, according to Alexis, and this we may call an analytical approach. In contrast to both these approaches, my own perspective is a decisively normative one. I'm interested in how to justify the proportionality test. Justification is my sole concern here, not explanation or propositional identification. So my answer to the normative question is that the normative basis of proportionality lies in a moral right to justification as developed by Rainer Forst. I have divided my paper into three parts. I will first explain in more detail Forst's moral right to justification. Second, I will explore how it relates to the proportionality test. And third, I will demonstrate how the relations between the right to justification and proportionality work as a robust fundament of discursive global constitutionalism. So let me start with saying a few words on the right to justification. So Forst characterizes human beings as discursive animals. That's the starting point. I'm not sure. Yeah, here we have this quotation. The basis, says Forst, the basis of the demand for justice is the claim to be respected as an agent of justification, that is, in one's dignity as a being who can ask for and give justification. I, Forst, argue for the thesis that we should understand political and social justice on the basis of a single right, the right to justification. So we can see here that Forst bases his right to justification on a certain anthropology. He characterizes human beings as discursive animals and justificatory beings. Humans have the ability to justify their actions by giving reasons to others. We operate in a space of reasons, and this is necessarily a social space. We necessarily act in a game of giving and asking for reasons, in the sense of Robert Brandom. All concrete legitimizations of given social relations are constantly being provided, questioned, revised, or rejected. So I think that Brandom's normative pragmatics and Forst's discourse theoretical approach perfectly match together in this respect. So in order that attempts to justify an action in the social space of reasons be successful, it is of course not sufficient just to state just about any reason. How do we know which reasons are good reasons, which reasons are acceptable reasons, legitimate ones? Forst uses two criteria in this respect, reciprocity and generality. Reciprocity requires that the normative claim to validity can be upheld without some participants claiming privileges over other participants. And generality demands that no objection of anyone affected by a decision is excluded. Forst's discourse theoretic and constructivist account of justification, Forst is a direct scholar of Jürgen Habermas, this discourse theoretic account is contrasted from, for example, a Kantian approach. A Kantian approach would focus on whether the action can be willed generally without contradiction, or whether the agent can will that each person decide as she would in a given situation. In contrast, Forst's theory seeks to turn Kant, as he says, from its transcendental head to its social feet. Justification cannot operate from some stock of moral truth that are fixed once and for all. Rather, reasons only exist in a discursive practice. We must always reactualize and newly validate our reasons in concrete practices of justification. It is our concrete practices of justification in which the strength of the better argument legitimizes itself. Now, the right to justification is based upon an anthropologic existentialist basis, understanding humans as discursive animals. It is based on the fact that human beings are discursive beings. And this argument seems to be vulnerable to the naturalistic fallacy objection. What ought to be cannot be justified by what is. From the mere fact that humans engage in practices of justifying, it does not follow that they ought to do so. Exactly this ought, however, must be justified if a right to justification is to exist. And this objection has been raised against Forst by the philosopher Ottfried Höffel from Tübingen. However, a constructivist theory can only find the basis within the practice, from an internal point of view. The normativity of our discursive justifications cannot be separated from the practices of justifying, because it arises in these very practices in the first place. So qua sociality, the right to justification is dependent upon our ability to reciprocally cognize and recognize each other as justificatory beings. There's a quotation on that. Humans recognize themselves and each other reciprocally as members of the moral community of justification that includes all human beings as autonomous and responsible beings endowed with reason who are members of a shared and commonly constructed space of justifying reasons. So that means that the right to justification as a moral right, as an ought, depends on our disposition to want ourselves as this cursive creatures. It is hence reliant on existentialist decisions on our own identities. It depends on constructive acts of self-interpretation and self-formation. And I think Forst does not acknowledge that clearly enough. This dependency of normativity on sociality and on existentialist decision, however, to my opinion, does not imply that normativity can be reduced to social facts, as the objection from the natural fallacy assumes. Normativity is created in a social space, but it does not collapse to mere intersubjective practices or consensus. Rather, what is being created in the social sphere is a distinctive normative status. So my result is that there is not an is-ought fallacy in Forst's argumentation. One consequence from this is, however, in contrast to Forst's own account, I would like to stress that the right to justification is relativized to a certain practice, namely the practice of giving and asking for reasons. So the necessity of normativity is relative to a specific discursive practice. It is relative and dependent upon our existential decision to accept each other as discursive persons competent in asserting, asking, and arguing. So far for forced right to justification as a moral right, as a moral core of the principle of justice. And with that, I move on to my second part, which focuses on the right to proportionality. And the first point I would like to make relates to the interconnections between the notions of correctness, justification, and argumentation. So, the justification of propositions used in rights reasoning is connected with the concept of correctness, because what is justifiable is correct. The notion of correctness directly relates to the notion of justification. The claim to correctness is key to reconstructing the relation between proportionality and justification. The claim to correctness raised by any legal proposition represents a kind of overarching argumentation theoretic framework in which the relation between proportionality and justification must be reconstructed. Reciprocity and generality forced criteria for good reasons. Reciprocity and generality seem to be purely formal requirements rather than substantial criteria. And one may wonder whether this merely formal things, reciprocity and generality, would be enough to establish a substantial theory of justice rather than a purely formal one. Given that Forst uses these formal criteria, the right to justification may be vulnerable to quite the same objection that has also been raised against the proportionality test. We have a striking similarity of counter-arguments here, because also with proportionality, some people claim that it was purely formal. This objection, however, this objection of pure formality and not taking account of substantive things, this objection is not true. It is neither true for proportionality nor for the right to justification. Why? Well, from the right to justification follow a number of substantive human rights. Rational justificatory discourse presupposes, for example, freedom of expression, freedom of information. These are substantive human rights that already constrain the democratic process significantly. Even more importantly, these substantive human rights are not sort of artificially added towards the right of justification as an additional element, rather they follow directly from the idea of a free and rational discourse as necessary conditions of any general and reciprocal practice of justification. So already from this idea we have not pure formality anymore, we do have substantive human rights in the game. A second element can be added in this context, and this is the so-called external justification in rights reasoning and the proportionality test. I will say a few words more in due course on that external justification, but for the time, let me only say that external justification in proportionality analysis already contains all the substantive arguments that are needed to establish whether or not proportionality test was violated. So I'm saying basically that the substance of justification is part and parcel of the practices of proportionality and justification. So still, proportionality can be interpreted as one of those formal rules which serve to establish the space of reason. That is an element from Forst. He talks of formal rules which establish the space of reasons, and proportionality, this is my point, is one of those formal rules. The space is inhabited in common by human beings as justificatory beings, and the space of reasons in which we operate is necessarily an open-ended space. It is open-ended. Discourse never comes to a definite stop. and justification is potentially infinite. I label this the diachronic dimension of the right to justification. It is not static, but diachronic. Ronald Dworkin prominently suggested reconstructing the development of the law by analogy to writing a chain novel. My suggestion is that this metaphor does not only apply to the interpretation of legal rules, but that we can use this chain novel metaphor also for applying legal principles by means of proportionality analysis. So, why? Each judge inherits a corpus comprising earlier applications of the proportionality test, which have been submitted by other judges or legal scholars. And the new decision made by the judge is meant to extend this corpus and to fit into the chain in a way that makes the work more significant or otherwise better, to quote Dworkin. So my point is that we have a chain novel, not only on propositions how to interpret a legal norm, a legal rule, but we also have a chain novel of propositions on proportionality. By now I can trust the probably. I'm a control freak. So, I promised you some more words on internal and external justification on the proportionality test, and this has been done introduced by recent studies on proportionality. Internal and external justification, or first order justification, second order justification, and so on, those are labels that have been used in the past by Alexei, McCormick, Wroblewski, to distinguish between the logical formal scheme of an interpretive argument, internal, any proposition following this internal logical deductive scheme is internally justified, but of course a legal argument must also externally justify the premises used in that internal structure. So we claim, we demand that any legal interpretation, any legal argument on top of the logic must also be come up with external arguments. And my point is that there's a similarity here between what we know on the argumentation, interpretation of rules, and proportionality. Also, proportionality test per se provides a formal structure, right? A formal set of five questions that have to be answered in order to develop correct decisions in right cases. Any legal decision that poses and answers those five questions of the proportionality test is internally justified. Many scholars mistake the proportionality test for this pure formality. And I have had this little exchange with the Canadian scholar Luc Tremblay in the Icon. I would like to briefly mention that. And Luc Tremblay argues that for the purposes of judicial review, the judges do not need to postulate the validity or truth of one substantive theory, and the judges do not need to use the process of constitutional interpretation to this end. And by this, Tremblay means to justify proportionality test as a good thing, right? And I have interpreted this, that Tremblay's normative defense of proportionality boils down to a relief thesis. The proportionality test, in his view, offers judges relief from the burden of engaging in far-reaching normative assumptions. To quote Tremblay, the judges can avoid almost all difficult epistemological and normative questions, and the courts are not compelled, he says, to impose certain controversial moral, political, or philosophical substantive views. End of quote. By using balancing and proportionality, judges could, though Tremblay hopes, escape the slippery slope of substantial, politically contested moral argument. In my view, this relief thesis represents a commonly held misunderstanding of the proportionality test. which claims that it was purely formal. The proportionality test is not detached from substantive reasoning, in my account. Any decision of a rights case must employ a general theory of legal argumentation, and in its most developed form, proportionality analysis and balancing are supplemented by a discursive theory of legal argumentation. The application of rights is an argumentative exercise requiring substantive argument. According to the special case thesis, legal discourse is a special case of general practical discourse. Hence, balancing the last step of proportionality is always an instance of moral reasoning. When determining the degrees of satisfying or non-satisfying the colliding principles, that's basically what we do when we balance, in accordance with the law of balancing, judges have to engage in contested moral and political considerations. So that means that the formality and substantive neutrality of the proportionality test goes only so far as its formal structure goes, just in the same way as the legal syllogism is formal and neutral. Nevertheless, the claim to correctness raised by any legal proposition and the right to justification require more than pure formality. This is the reason why any decision of a rights case must also be externally justified, in addition to its internal justification. Judges must justify externally that, for example, the intensity of an interference with the right was serious rather than light, or that the weight of a competing principle was moderate rather than light or serious. Such evaluations can only be externally justified by means of practical reasoning and substantial argument. So, let's go further. I demonstrate in the paper that the universality of proportionality is present not only in the internal justification. Yeah, we could say the internal structure, the set of five questions, they are globally valid, they are universal. But in addition to that, I claim that universality is to a certain degree also present in the external justification. It would be a far too rough picture if we equated internal justification with universality and external justification with particularism. If beyond internal justification there was only culture relativity, proportionality could be universal only in a very weak sense. Still, it would be universal, but only very weakly so. Yet, the integration between external justification in proportionality analysis on the one hand and rational argumentation on the other hand enables universality valid propositions in external justification also. And this is due to the fact that we have this distinction in discourse theory on discursively necessary outcomes, discursively impossible outcomes, and discursively possible outcomes. So in my view, the scope of particularistic cultural diversity stretches as far as discursively possible outcomes. It consists precisely in those areas in which two incompatible normative propositions can be justified without violating any of the rules of rational discourse. And this can be labeled the relative dimension of proportionality. The relative dimension of proportionality relative to some cultural specific local community is represented by the discursively merely possible. Nonetheless, the scope of the discursively possible has its limits. Several normative propositions are stringently required or flatly excluded. Discursively necessary, discursively impossible. So it is precisely this discursively necessary and discursively impossible propositions that represent an absolute dimension of proportionality within external justification. In result, the universality of proportionality analysis is present not only in internal justification, in the logical structure, in the set of five questions, but to a certain degree also in external justification. Proportionality is a general standard of rationality. It reconciles universalism and particularism. Both the right to justification and proportionality are universally valid standards, which are interculturally non-rejectable. At the same time, however, they remain culturally sensitive and applicable to particular cases and contexts. And that is basically what struck me so much when I read Forst for the first time, when I discovered his research, that many of the points he developed for the right to justification exactly, more or less exactly matched debates on proportionality. It is precisely this capacity of reconciling universalism and particularism that makes the proportionality test so well suited as an element of global constitutionalism. And it also can explain the factual success of proportionality migration and successful legal transfer I was mentioning in my introduction. These features of proportionality to reconcile universalism and particularism can explain why it was so spread all over the world. So my last part relates to discursive global constitutionalism. Just a couple of weeks ago in Graz, I came up with my group on the idea that we would need to do a research profile, right? A research profile for the group. And I remember I was highly skeptical to this idea of labeling a research profile. Why? Because the last time I did this was when I was a young postdoc and just about to start writing my habilitation thesis, right? And I still have this mind map I made back in those days, years ago. And it's totally crazy because it was like all areas of the law, I was claiming to be my research profile. And then I was told by some senior advisor people and my faculty back in Hamburg, I should include some elements of administrative law. So I was for weeks going, contemplating whether I should choose, environmental law or rather some different area and so on. So it's completely crazy, far too broad, that is my point. I was far too broad. So back from that experience, and I only understood that later, and from that experience I was highly skeptical of doing a research profile. Now, still I did it, we did it again, it was surprisingly, went well, because now I could see far more clearly, looking back, what my own research was about, and we defined two main areas and six research topics. Now, global constitutionalism is one of those areas. That is why I share this little anecdote with you. So, discursive constitutionalism institutionalizes the moral right to justification in a specific form of deliberative democracy that allows for practices of justification in a reciprocal and general way. The right to justification provides a middle way between liberalism and communitarianism, offering a better combination of universal moral and particular political ethical components of the ethos of democracy. And this middle way, in turn, is of vital importance for a mixed account of global constitutionalism. And this mixed account of global constitutionalism sort of unites liberal ideas of universal fundamental values with more republican virtues of deliberation, contestation, and participation. And to my view, proportionality is a central means to achieve this unification. Some scholars have claimed that the rise of proportionality as a general standard had detached the normativity of constitutional law from its local origins. My now Vienna colleague, Alexander Zomek, he says that the constitution was no longer firmly tied to the history of a particular community. And he blames, Zomek blames proportionality test for this detachment. So the idea that proportionality test, by applying proportionality test, we would take away the constitutional law from its roots, right, in a local community. So I think that the real dimension of discursive constitutionalism disproves Zomek's claim. The real dimension of discursive constitutionalism is in accordance with the dual nature of legal argumentation, and it shapes the external justification of proportionality analysis. I have a paper on the dual nature of legal argumentation. And by the real dimension, and contrary to Zomek's claim, it allows giving proper weight to all the real authoritative community-related considerations. Now, it would be wrong to assume that the combination of justification and proportionality led only to thin constitutionalism. That was a comment I received in London last year, that justification and proportionality bring about only thin constitutionalism, characterized by pure formality and detachment from any substantive considerations of justice. This assumption, thin constitutionalism, would only be correct if the right to justification related to proportionality's internal justification only. However, as I have said, the right to justification is a comprehensive concept, integrating both internal and external justification and embracing the whole range of factual, normative, universal, and local elements of rights reasoning. It thus lays the basis for constructing thick constitutionalism, properly so called. The moral right to justification is a robust fundament of discursive global constitutionalism. Following the theory of discursive constitutionalism, law's claim to correctness implies a claim to proportionality. The right to justification is a right to proportionality, and the former is the moral basis of the latter. The right to proportionality, in turn, is controlled in the judicial forum by means of constitutional review. Therefore, the right to justification is not only the normative fundament of proportionality analysis as a standard, but it is also the normative basis for constitutional review. Now, last point, and then I stop. One may wonder whether the move from a moral right to justification to proportionality as a legal principle was well-founded. Samantha Besson posed that challenge to me. And I learned from her that we need some kind of bridge mechanism between morality and our legal constitutional law, in order to justify the move from the legal to the from the moral to the legal world. This bridge mechanism can be found in human rights themselves. Why? Because human rights, as moral rights, carry an inherent drive into the legal world. Why is that so? Well, because human rights, qua moral rights, demand to be institutionalized in a positive legal order. And human rights demand being transformed into constitutional rights. Constitutional rights, in turn, necessarily imply proportionality. Therefore, human rights, qua moral rights, demand the proportionality principle qua legal principle. Constitutional rights, qua legal rights, institutionalize human rights, qua moral rights. And the proportionality principle, as a legal principle, institutionalizes the moral right to justification. And with this argumentative circle between the elements of discursive global constitutionalism is a closed circle, and this is the strongest conceivable normative defense of the proportionality test.